Hello and welcome back to L&D Disrupt. I can't believe I'm saying it again, but I've got something different for you today. Now, every time I try and look into examples of companies who've solved an L&D challenge, done a particular part of the L&D strategy really well, I struggle to find these case studies that are more thought leadership and practical guide. So I want to start having these conversations with people who've solved a big L&D challenge and have them explain to us how they did it. The thought process, the step-by-step, who they involved, the lessons they learned, the impact they had, all of that good stuff that I can't normally find. And I'm pleased to say I'm starting off this series with an episode on how to become a skills-based organization. I'm joined by ORC's Keisha Kruger, who took us through this multiple-year journey of understanding the skills that they would need internally, getting the stakeholders involved and getting them to feel comfortable, how they built out career paths and the technology they used, how they made the frictionless approach for managers accessible so it didn't feel like a big lift for them, and it was really easy to provide consistent pathways and experiences to their learners. And a lot more that I've probably forgotten to mention here. There'll be links to connect with Keisha below to check out what ORC do and listen to Keisha's Paradigm Shifts podcast, so just scroll down and click on them if you want to know more. As always, you can let me know what you think by connecting with me on LinkedIn, and I will share the link for that below too. So I'm really excited for you to hear this, and I hope you enjoy this first in the series of the L&D playbook. Keisha, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hello, nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Before we get into this idea of how you became a skills-based organization, why it's important, advice for other people, maybe set some context and tell us a bit about who you are, what ORC do, and your role there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, my name is Keisha Kruger. I'm a director of organization development. So that is short for OD. And what that means is I focus on performance management, change management, leadership development, L&D, all those like really key people strategic initiatives at our organization. I've been in the role for about 4 years, but I've been in organizational psychology as a field for about 12. And where I'm working is at ORC, and we are a 55-year-old right-of-way firm, professional services firm. And so we specialize in land acquisition, and it's a really niche industry within the real estate industry and really focuses on negotiating land rights for utility and public sector.
Cool. One thing we're going to get into is this playbook for becoming a skills-based organization. I don't know about you, but every time I'm looking for like really good case studies on how did this company do this, in the L&D space, I can never really find it. So I'm really excited that you're going to share some insights with us. For a bit more context, why was it so important for ORC to become a skills-based organization?
Yeah, I think that's such a great question, one that's going to really set us off here to really sharing a little bit more context. So at ORC, we recognize early on that the future of work is skills-based. The research underscores that there's a shifting landscape. With the World Economic Forum, they did a study in 2020 that highlighted that 50% of employees will need to be reskilled by 2025, just due to the adoption of new technologies. And now that we're in the age of AI, I'm sure everyone can probably see that that's a real, real change. And so this shift is not only crucial for the agility and the competitiveness of an organization, but also when you think about an employee's ability to grow and also engaging our employees. And when we focus on skills rather than just job titles, that's allowing us to be able to create a more flexible, dynamic organization where our talent can be utilized and developed more effectively, both of those things. And so really, this approach aligns with the core principles of organizational psychology and what we term a learning organization. So we emphasize the importance of nurturing a growth mindset and continuous learning. And personally, our collaboration with HowNow has really been instrumental in achieving that transformation, because this platform, HowNow, has really provided us with the tools and resources that allow us to effectively curate learning pathways around that skills architecture and the different skills gaps.
Brilliant. I didn't even need to, I didn't ask Keisha to say that before we kicked off. So I'm really happy to hear that. One thing I love about the story you shared to me last time is none of this happened overnight. And I think that's a really important piece of context for people to know, that you don't just go from zero to 100 with being a skills-based organization straight away. So talk us through some of those first steps and those early pilots to see if this could work and what that looked like.
Yeah, I love when people go back to the beginning and share their lead up, because it gives like a more realistic expectation of these kind of transformations in a business. But really, the journey began when I first came on board at ORC. I was assigned my first priority project, which was to overhaul our performance management processes and systems. And like any good practitioner, before you overhaul, you really get rooted in the current state. You get to scan the environment, ask yourself powerful questions like, what does our performance processes look like now? How does ORC define top performers? And not unlike many other organizations that are either family owned or smaller owned businesses or even startups, the annual performance review process is really kind of stuck in the past. And that's the first thing I noticed. We were using yes and no criteria to really qualify an employee's performance by asking managers to check one of those options when they answered the question, did your employee meet expectations for the year? And then it made sense to me why this was like our first priority project. So after really unraveling and undoing some of those systems and processes, I got to a point where I could pilot the integration of skills into our performance reviews, which helped us have like a holistic view of employee performance. So you can focus on not only what is achieved, but how it's achieved. And we're gonna get into why that's really important later. But that initial step was not just about identifying skills, but really creating a culture, again, where continuous learning is really valued. Because in organizational psychology, the research shows that there is a strong positive correlation between a learning culture and an increase in employee engagement and performance. So, going back to your original question, like it didn't happen overnight. Before anything, I had to define the essential core skills that we knew at our organization would be important for driving our business forward. So what are the soft skills? Let's use power skills. What are the power skills that our organization would need to have by job level? So, and this is how we did it, and I designed it in our organization, and I'm sure other organizations might think of it differently. But looking at our individual contributors, our managers, our directors, our VPs, and our executives, and then defining those for the organization. So it was important for us to have power skills by job level, because there's really like this foundation of skills that are important for everyone to have in their toolbox at the base level. So as you advance in experience and responsibility, like your skill sets become even more evolved. And so I really designed the skills architecture to build upon each other. And I'd be happy to go into more detail about that if you have any questions.
Yeah. I'm curious about how this was received. Did, you know, like bringing it into the performance review process, did that really work as a nice way to seamlessly bring it in, to show people value quickly? I know that it probably worked as a good way to actually measure skills, because you were saying let's actively make this shift away from the yes and no to a bit more nuance. Mm-hmm. And the best way we can do that is with skills, I guess.
Yeah. So at first, with any new initiative or any new change, there was, you know, some resistance, right? It's like, well, you know, the prior review process was much simpler, right? It took a lot less time. We didn't have to necessarily have performance discussions. So really my role was driving change, and lots of change management went into this. I mean, identifying the key stakeholders, building a sponsor coalition at the executive senior level, and really saying, all right, if I am prioritizing a performance review overhaul and we're saying skills matter, then why do they matter? And identifying like what are the benefits of being a skills-based organization and knowing and pinpointing skills. And really what surfaced for us is like, if you're aware of what the skills are that are required to be successful, that obviously lends itself to the tools that will then lead to skill growth. So really that, so what? Okay, I know that this is a skill I need to work on, now what? And so that's really what led and drove the the overall initiative was kind of reinforcing the value, reinforcing the benefits. But those benefits change from group to group. And I'm sure you've experienced this if you're rolling something out in your organization at How Now. But if you are an individual contributor or a senior leader, what you think is really important, it might not be the same as what another group might be thinking. So we really had to hone in on that. What are the things that would benefit our individual contributors if we were to move into this model? And for our individual contributors, it was loud and clear. Our employee engagement survey said that they wanted to know more about how they can grow and develop. What does development look like at ORC? How do we go from where we are now and where we want to be? And that is a great use case of a skills architecture.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, it starts with that feedback that clearly at different levels, this is what people want. You use the performance review to really start making that change. And I guess once you had that validation that people were receiving the idea of the skills well, it was working within the performance review, what was the next step on kind of taking it to another level, scaling it that little bit further?
Yeah, so after validating the pilot, well, I will say before the validation, we had to define the skills too. I want to make sure that I make that clear. You don't just say, all right, these are the skills that we need to have. We need to define them so that everyone has a clear understanding of what those expectations are and what that skill means. My interpretation of effective communication or crisis management might be different than someone else, right? So really defining them and identifying what it looks like. And like I said, that was not an overnight accomplishment. We didn't do that just in a vacuum. It wasn't something that was done in just my department in OD. We collaborated heavily with other individuals in the organization. So especially when we were getting clarity on what is the performance expectation look like for this skill, it was really important for us to include the people who were being impacted by the work, the people that were in the roles doing the work, and the managers that were managing that work so that we had a real clear picture of those skill opportunities. So we scaled our approach to get to that next level by then distinguishing, all right, we have these core people skills by job level that are really foundational, the power skills that really drive, the people side of our business, which we sell our people. We are a professional services firm, so that's what we do sell. We sell our people. But at the end of the day, we also position ourselves as experts and knowledge experts in our field and in our industry. And so we then further started to define, okay, what are the technical skills by that role? So role-specific skills. And so then we got to be able to get a grasp on that. And like I said, being able to include all different stakeholders to identify what are those skills, what's important, and what are those expectations? So I know we talked a little bit about, I said skill awareness is, it's great for lending itself to like the performance discussions, but from my perspective and in organizational development, it really is the thing that kind of connects the dots to most, if not all, critical people functions. So when you think about learning and development, that's an obvious one, but also leadership development, succession planning, career pathing, and there's so much more. So skills is really the thing, right? That's the absolute foundation.
Did a lot of it come from speaking to people doing the role and just really understanding like what actually are the big obstacles you face, or like what are the key output metrics you're trying to reach, and are there any gaps between what you do now and what you'd need to do this more effectively? I guess it was kind of a lot of that, like you say, really getting close to the stakeholders.
Yeah, getting close to the stakeholders. We leaned heavily on focus group conversations. And like I said, that group, those focus groups were diverse. We didn't just have senior leaders in there that were saying, all right, this is what we think. We had people in there that were in those roles. And that was really important to me as an organizational psychologist and an OD practitioner. We look at the whole organization, the whole system, and that includes the individuals that are doing the work.
You mentioned as well your background in organizational psychology. How did that kind of translate to this exercise overall? And any advice you'd give to people for kind of really leveraging some of the stuff you learned along the way?
Yeah, so I would say lots and lots of research. That was particularly valuable. it became valuable when it came to mapping out our skills architecture and refining our job leveling framework. So if without that, it would be difficult to do from scratch, I would say, if you don't have a job leveling framework. And so if you're not an OD practitioner or org psychologist and you're not familiar with like competency modeling, this could feel like a very scientific, theoretical approach, but it really is a rigorous process that takes a long time. Like I mentioned, it was probably 2 years before we actually got to the point where we are today to be able to roll out our growth and development initiatives. But really that framework, that comprehensive skills framework, became the foundation for personalized development plans, career progression tracks, which is what we're in the midst of releasing right now. It's a very exciting time at our organization. But some advice I would say is just lean on individuals who have studied org psychology, bring in the experts, don't be afraid to ask for help, and don't do it on your own, right? I think sometimes we can be biased if we don't include others. I know we can be biased if we don't include others, so we want to make sure that we're looking at the holistic side of things.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I mean, something interesting, you mentioned there's different people benefit from skills being developed in different ways. Like there's someone who's directly affected by a problem. There's someone who would pay to get that problem done. There's someone who will benefit from the problem being fixed. So you do really need to bring in all the perspectives to understand what skills I need for the final output and for every stakeholder to be really happy with it.
Yeah, I think my largest role or most important role is just being the container, holding the space for those conversations to happen and asking those powerful questions to get to the root of all those things that we're really trying to look at. And so if you look at what I do from that lens, it's really like a really, really cool thing.
No, absolutely. Yeah. And I guess I feel this in almost all the roles I've worked in. There's a real temptation to want to start doing something and to really rush through this foundational part that you mentioned. You know, it took you almost 2 years, but have you found that having that solid foundation for the stuff we're about to discuss in a minute has meant that you've been able to act fast, you've been able to act effectively, you've been able to show value quicker? Now you've got the steady foundation in place.
Yeah, I will say, we were actually going to release what we're releasing now with our grow tracks, which we'll talk about, last year. And then we had a conversation with some of our executive team members that just maybe felt a little bit more hesitant about the approach. Not necessarily the approach, but the solution maybe being misinterpreted or perhaps like we weren't being, you know, they didn't feel comfortable going where we were with it at that time, where we were in the organization. So it was a pullback for us. It's like, even though I didn't feel like we were rushing it up to that point.
To come back to that idea about the stakeholders, I think knowing that people maybe don't feel comfortable and having the relationships where people feel comfortable communicating that to you is actually really useful, because it means you roll it out at the right time. You actually have your finger on the pulse to say, this isn't the right time to do it. And if we did it now, it wouldn't be that well received. We have to do it at the optimum moment to really make impact with people.
Yeah. I mean, going back to the comment you said about sometimes you just want to rush it. I mean, if you're a people ops professional, HR, or an OD professional, your role is really advocating, right, for employee voices. And I think one of the things that, you know, could be tempting is to say, all right, I want to meet that employee's needs. I want to be able to provide the solution. I'm looking at all the engagement feedback. I'm looking at our strategy. It aligns with our organizational initiatives, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the right time. And there are lots of building blocks that go into place beforehand. One of the things that when we not scrapped it, but re-strategized to be able to get to where we are today is really in being, again, like having a holistic stakeholder approach to defining a growth and development philosophy. So that is something that a lot of organizations are missing in this type of an initiative, is that they don't really have a clear document that tells employees what does development look like. And for us, it was a really cool way for us to say, all right, what are the pain points that you're having? What are the challenges that you think are going to arise if we were to release this in 3 to 6 months? And being able to address that in the development philosophy was like huge pivot for us. Then we were able to come back and say, okay, we think that we feel really comfortable releasing these tools out there and letting employees chart their development, because it, one of the biggest concerns that our leadership team had, and rightfully so, is that it would put some immense pressure on managers to feel like they had to be responsible for employee development, whereas like they are supportive. Their role is to guide and support and coach, but it's not driving that development. You can't force an employee to develop, right? So we included language in our development philosophy that was really clear. Employees, you're in the driver's seat. Your manager is in the passenger seat. They're guiding you, but really, if you want to develop, you want to see skill growth, that's on you. You need to own that. And so that was really, really critical.
I love that. It's such a simple thing to do, but just to make sure you do have a documented version of what your promises and your expectations are around development, because how can you say we delivered on our promise to the end user, the internal customer, the employee, if we never provided clarity about what the expectations were or what the journey was going to be? So I really like that, that was part of the foundation as well. You mentioned grow tracks a couple of times, and I really want to get into this now, because all of the foundation we spoke about was leading up to this moment. So tell us about grow tracks, what they are, and how you built them out.
Yeah, I love grow tracks. Grow tracks are a feature or tool within Lattice, which is our performance management platform. And it's really our solution to making unspoken career paths visible and actionable. They are a structured framework around how we built clear expectations and development opportunities for progression without implying that direct line to promotion. So our approach really aligns with findings from organizational development research that emphasizes the importance of clear development pathways for employee motivation and retention. Lots of research out there, lots of studies that show this. Number one reason why people are likely, or at least in the top five, are likely to leave an organization is because there was a lack of career development and progression, or at least having those discussions with their manager, right? So when we were able to identify the skills needed for success and close those knowledge gaps, we can then create targeted learning experiences and pathways around that. And that process, again, was like really supported by HowNow, because that helps us centralize our learning materials and directly link them to our individual grow tracks. So the learning was really accessible and relevant.
I think it's just testament to the foundational part you mentioned, that this seems so simple on the surface, because it's, you know, what's needed for someone to progress in this role, what are the skills they need now and don't have, what does success look like, and how do we close the gaps between the two? And it only sounds simple because there's such a strong mm-hmm. foundation there, isn't there? And part of that, I love this idea of the unspoken career paths. You know, like, what are these unwritten rules internally actually around development? What are perceptions that everyone knows but we don't acknowledge that we might need to change? What are mm-hmm. expectations around what development means? You know, is there that For people listening, you know, is there that belief in your company that if you do build a skill, it automatically leads to progression, or does it mean something else? So I really like how you've kind of captured that as part of the process as well.
Yeah, supercharged our people initiatives, absolutely.
And you mentioned earlier about, you know, managers maybe being hesitant that it will be tricky for them, or other stakeholders believing it will be tricky. That leads us nicely onto how you built out those learning experiences and pathways, because you explained this really nice, simple 3E model to me last time. But yeah, tell everyone about that, because I really think this would be beneficial for people to hear.
Yeah, the 3E framework, it's been a game changer and in allowing us to reduce manager friction and also in empowering employees to take ownership over their development, because it simplifies a complex process. Sometimes when you're thinking about learning and development, it can be overwhelming when you're like, well, going back to that question, so what? What's next? Okay, I've identified this skill. Now, how do I learn? How do I develop? And I think what's really awesome about ORC and my position in the company is I was able to answer that question with some really cool solutions. So we categorize our learning experiences and our development activities into experiences, exposure, and education. And that leverages the wealth of existing knowledge that we have within ORC, but also externally as well, and how Now helps us pull all of that learning together, and we are able to link it within our growth tracks within Lattice. So we have a really integrated, supercharged, connected system. And the 3E framework is built upon, it kind of leverages or relies a little bit on what most L&D professionals would call the 70-20-10 model. In an adult learning theory, we capitalize on saying that 70% of your learning would be experiential, right? It's that hands-on practice. It's the ability to apply what you've learned. 20% of your learning would be exposure, which is that social learning, shadowing, getting a mentor, asking questions. And then the 10% of learning would be that education opportunity. So that would be maybe like a formal course or reading a book or learning some articles, things like that, maybe a classroom or a webinar. Those are the different opportunities that we kind of split our learning experiences around, and we encourage our employees to think about their learning in those ways. And we also include these questions in our Zoom out conversations with managers to say, you know, what learning best suits you early on, so that that manager can then adapt the learning experiences to the employee as well.
Yeah. What does that look like for a manager? You know, they've had this conversation, they know the skills that are needed to progress, they've got this really simple framework they can follow. What in practice does that look like for a manager as they say, right, this is how we can shape a learning experience for someone or a pathway?
Yeah, well, I think what it looks like is first having really good software. I think it's really having really great tools, getting out of our spreadsheets and stop using them for training plans, but really having like a really nice interface that pulls everything together. For our managers, what it looks like is the ability to go in and look at an employee's grow tab in Lattice and be able to see, all right, These are isolated growth areas that we've developed or put into a development plan. And now we are identifying, all right, I can see in one picture, this is the skill expectations, this is the skill definition, this is what's required to be successful here. And then here are the things that we want to be able to build into their learning journey to develop that skill. During our performance reviews at year end, we have our managers really reflect on what are those two at minimum development areas that that employee has for their current role. And then if we have the opportunity to talk with employees, or the employees are at a place where they're interested in that next level, then that platform, the tool, will allow us to see visibly side by side, what are the expectations where I'm at, and then what are the expectations in the next level. So managers really rely heavily on these tools so that they can see everything in one place. And then again, connecting those learning and experience activities right within the tracks and the individual development plans allows employees to be able to go in there without friction, pinpoint that information that they need within ORC Academy, which is our How Now platform.
I like the word friction there, because this was something I was just thinking about. If I'm a manager, I'm not necessarily an L&D pro. So if you've given me this idea that these are maybe building blocks, right? I take some of the 3 E's, I put them together, and therefore I can deliver something effective, but there's not this huge amount of friction or something massively outside my comfort zone. So do they kind of work as guides? Are there recommendations within each E for you to go and say, right, I'm going to put these things together and this is what good looks like?
Yeah, such a great point. So this is where we took it a step further again, is we actually provided a suggested developmental activity list around those 3 E's for every single skill in our organization. So if you thought that defining our and mapping our skills architecture would take a long time, this definitely took a little bit longer. And that's where I'm really proud of our team and the leaders that supported this at our organization. So really identifying, okay, what are experience, exposure, and educational opportunities that exist within ORC as knowledge that relates to that technical skill or soft skill? And what are the opportunities that exist within our How Now platform that we can leverage and building those opportunities in, tailoring it to the role? So when a manager goes in to build an IDP, they're not relying on themselves to come up with it. They have a really great suggests the developmental activity list already built into that grow track that they can just drag and drop into that development area. And so that really helps the manager either tailor it further for that role to make it a little more specific, or gives them ideas and allows them to take creative freedom.
I would imagine that for people listening, that is like a really useful piece of advice they can take away and apply. I can't remember exactly because my memory's not that good, but when we did the trends report at the end of last year, there was some great data around: one, your manager is the single person with the biggest influence on your employee. Two,
absolutely,
managers are directly flagging areas where they need enablement. And this was one of them. How do I go away and have a better career conversation with people? How do I actually provide better development pathways for my people? Because I think there was a self-awareness there from managers that's helpful for L&D, that they have to do a lot of different things and they're an expert in a lot of things, but maybe this isn't it. So I love that. I imagine it's been really well received by managers as well as people internally.
Yeah, we had a beta test run because, like I said, we're literally launching this now. January, we unveiled our growth and development philosophy. February, we had our managers in the lab. They were learning how to develop people through a workshop. This month is when we're releasing the tools. But we did have a beta test, and we had a group of 40 to 50 employees who wanted to act, really, really enthusiastic about using the IDP tools and the grow tracks. And so, if the employees are using it, then their managers need to use it. So double that, right? So we have about 80 to 100 people of our 400 person organization that are already adopting and utilizing the tool. And that gave us a lot of really good feedback to help us in iterations and improvements of the product and also our processes. And so over time, we've been able to customize and improve our IDP template, the language that we use. I really paid attention to what language is really sticky. If you're going to introduce new language within the organization around some of these tools that are maybe L&D focused or OD focused or something that's more of a jargon, you really want to make sure that you're meeting managers or employees where they are in terms of their language, and then you can build upon it. So that was something that was really critical. I think the three E's is really a very easy thing to grasp on, rather than like a 70-20-10 model, which feels a little bit robotic in a way.
Yeah. There's this idea, I've mentioned this before, but value laden language, like language that carries baggage. And I think 70-20-10 maybe gets an eye roll. So to reframe it to something that will resonate with people is such an excellent point. It's what salespeople do all the time. If they want you to feel like you're on the same page, they just repeat the language you used back to them, and they do it because it works. So listen to people's language they use. Make sure you embed that in the communication around the efforts that you're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I love the fact that you also piloted again. You know, at the start, it was a pilot. There was real testing and then iterations. And then you did it again before you're rolling it out. I imagine you learned some really cool things from this group test, but that will now mean that the rollout is going to be even more successful.
From my perspective, I'm always piloting. So we're always just piloting. It's never like a full release. Technology is always adapting and changing. And I think we like to instill having adaptability is a skill set within our organization, and change agility, right? So I like to use the language of like, this is a pilot. we're going to continue piloting this until the end of time.
I can massively relate. Everything feels like a pilot. Like, I'll roll out this new thing and it works well enough to validate I should do more. But then I can also see the holes where, like, I need to level up this thing if I'm going to carry on doing it. So
truly,
I don't think I've ever left the pilot phase of almost anything, really.
Truly. Yeah, absolutely. I don't think we really do. And I also think it's going back to the language we use. When we use language that almost makes it seem like this is a fully completed, implemented solution, then we lay these like unrealistic expectations that things might change, right? Or might not change. And so going back to that change agility, like, we're going to be piloting this and continuing to improve it over time.
I like that, because you need to set realistic expectations. There's nothing worse than overpromising and under-delivering. And yes, you want to make people excited about what you're launching, but you don't want to set unfair expectations that then ultimately lead to disappointment. So yeah, great lesson for people to take away. I've really loved this conversation. I know there's a lot of practical advice for people in there, but was there anything we didn't discuss in your approach that you wanted to share, or final tips for people if they want to take away some of the stuff from this playbook and apply it?
Yeah, I would stress a couple things, like the importance of adopting a skills-based approach to organizational development. Like I've said it a couple times, but I think it bears mentioning again. It really does prepare companies for a future of work, and it empowers employees to really thrive and grow. Again, going back to that skill awareness, if I know what I need to improve upon, then that helps me get to that next step. So for those that are, you know, looking to implement this playbook in their organization, I would say start with a clear understanding of your skills landscape and really engage your employees in that process, so that when you're building your skills map, you're inclusive of all the voices of the individuals doing the work. But second thing I would share is that, you know, part of our change management strategy, like I said, was absolutely necessary to have a growth and development philosophy document. So making sure that you clarify what development looks like at your organization, even something as simple as where do we charge time to this, you know, to learning and development? Where does that get charged? Is that, you know, is that a company investment, or is that a personal investment? And being really clear about that as well. And so that's what I would say. Those are the two kind of big emphasizations that I would share.
Awesome. That's brilliant. I'm going to leave some links in the show notes below so that people can get in touch with you. They can learn more about ORC, check out your website, and check out your Paradigm Shifts podcast as well if they want to get some more insights from you moving forward. So, Keisha, I really appreciate this conversation. I know it'll bring a lot of value to people. So thank you very much.
Yeah, likewise. Thank you for having me, Gary.